So we are now talking about heritage in South Africa. You know, questions of heritage and identity are not as straightforward as they might first appear. And perhaps the first and best place to begin is by addressing these topics. It's just by acknowledging that a country like South Africa does not have one heritage or an easily delineated set of distinct identities. The cultures, languages, and heritage of South Africa are multiple. They're diverse and very, very dynamic. And when you think of our past, there's always that urge to honor the dead and remember violent struggles prevalent as well as the impulse to repress the terrible memories of the past. And as you often hear, to move on. And societies around the world undertake memorial activities to preserve historical memory relating to traumatic events. If you travel, this is one of the most interesting things to observe about how different countries have decided to observe certain traumatic events. Not too long ago, we looked at Rwanda's process of memorializing the trauma of the genocide there. And then also, if you go to places like Ghana, like Senegal, Benin, how they've memorialized things like the slave trade. Well, the National Heritage Council in South Africa is a statutory body that is responsible for the preservation of the country's heritage. This past weekend, it was interesting to see a report in the City Press talking about plans to build a museum in Mama Winnie Madikizela Mandela's birthplace, Mbongweni, in that village, and to refurbish the Ludeke Methodist Church where she and Nelson Mandela were married. So the two sites were identified by the National Heritage Council as key assets. These need to be built and turned into memorial sites. So what is the process? What are some of the considerations? So this afternoon, we're exploring the process of memorialization to help a society repair itself, a society like ours, especially for a country that is emerging from a violent, unjust past. And with the backdrop, of course, of Mama Winnie Madikizela Mandela's passing and legacy and the slow pace of completing the heritage sites that have been identified. And joining us for this conversation is Advocate Sonobile Mangotswa, and he is the CEO of the National Heritage Council. Good afternoon, Advocate. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Afternoon, Azania, and your listeners. It's also a pleasure,
yes,
to join you this afternoon.
So, you know, questions of heritage, like I said, they are not as straightforward as we would like them to be. So there's a lot to wrestle with. There's a lot to consider. But what contributions do memorial initiatives make towards reconciliation or social reconstruction? What do you believe are those contributions?
I think in your preface to this discussion, you have already outlined in a very succinct way. But I can think that here you're talking about heritage as a strategic resource for socio-economic development,
yes,
or for a country. When I talk about socio-economic development, you know, various countries have used heritage, guide the process of reconciliation, social cohesion, and build a nation from a divided past. That's really, you are talking about this way. You're talking about the social part of heritage, but of course then the economic spin-offs will actually come in. For instance, if you look at the National Heritage Council Act and the SARA Act and NARA Act, you'll see that here you're talking about heritage resources. You're not just talking about sites.
Yes.
These are resources. Now, the question is, how do you ensure that, for instance, if you look at sites, how do you turn sites from abstract spaces into strategic development nodes? You'll recall that Robben Island is Robben Island. It's an abstract space. But once in the narrative, you would include, that this is a place where, political prisoners were imprisoned from Osumayo in 1658. you know, first, you know, coercing, you know, the chief who actually to eat there, you know, generation of Mandela, the generation that is Sobukwe,
yes,
and then so forth. Then that becomes intangible heritage. That's a narrative. That's what will attract somebody from Venezuela to go to Robben Island.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the space, but the narrative and importance and significance of the space. Hence, we, as the, you know, I mean, there are, you know, laws that actually govern, you know, yes, the whole process of declaration of heritage sites and so forth. But provinces and local government, or, you know, where these sites are based, they ought to, you know, include, you know, these spaces as part of their development notes, like the IDPs in municipalities, you know, and provinces, and so forth. I'll take an example. A province like Eastern Cape is rich of liberation heritage because of, you know, icons coming from there. They may be buried in Gauteng and then so forth. And I make an example about this. I mean, I've spoken about Mpongwe. There's no way that you'll have a growth and development strategy of the Eastern Cape that does not include liberation heritage,
right,
as a strategic resource.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that, because any growth and development strategy of a province which does not foreground liberation heritage as this DNA will actually really bound to fail.
Yes. So now I want us to look at the process so far, because plans have been there to build the museum at Mama Winnie's birthplace in Mbongweni village, and also to refurbish the Luteka Methodist Church. So why is this process taking so long? Because the launch was meant to be, what, in September 2017, and it was meant to coincide with her birthday, which falls in September, I think, on the 28th, yes.
I think the writer of the article made serious, mistakes in capturing, you know, the sequence of the process.
Okay.
In the City Press, and I've actually spoken to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because that really not what that was. The Research Council visited there in September last year. Yeah?
Mm.
And I was, of course, we invited the municipality. Remember, we don't have, you know, funding for roads, you know, infrastructure, you know, areas. When we went to Mbongweni, we found that the access road, which is where Mawini was born, the access road was in a very bad shape. It was completely inaccessible. So that is why then we wrote to the municipality, the mayor, both the mayor of Mbizana and the mayor of Alfred Nzou. Actually, we met with them. I met with them personally to say that you needed to attend to this. But if you look at the budget and infrastructure, you know, the Department of Arts and Culture is responsible for, you know, the infrastructure, you know, part, which you talk about museums and so forth.
Mm.
Now, our role in the Research Council really is policy development, policy advice, you know. You can only, you know, that's within our, you know, ambit and research.
Mm.
So what then we did was, because the Research Council is also a coordinating body in terms of its, you know, constitutive act, we then ensured that every role player was brought under one table. There was also IDT also involved to say that you guys, you know, shape up, you know, ensure that there are things that actually need to be attended. They must be attended, you know. The Heritage Council also, remember there's this Liberation Route project.
The ORG.
Did a study, that is the National Liberation Route, which really Heritage Council is implementing that together with the Department of Arts and Culture, as this agency. So in 2012, we actually conducted a case study in the country. That actually shows, in that case study, we mapped about 400 sites. And we said that we found that you needed about 1.8 billion rands in order to turn these sites from abstract spaces into strategic nodes. in the same way that you can see Hector Peterson.
Yes.
You know, but now we are talking about now sites that are in the rural areas, you know, in the, you know, most neglected part of the country.
Mm.
Where should they have developed? We have been shown, for instance, that if those sites, if you invest in those sites, you know, what is going to be the, you know, the income generation that will go back to the economy?
Yes.
Like, if, for instance, if you look at the credit of humankind, how can the government, can this, you know, quantify in terms of revenue generation, how much that site bring back to the economy?
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at places, for instance, like Zirast, you know, where there's rich heritage, force, I mean, half Rainet, you know, Kimberley, you know, the Eastern Cape, you know, and so forth. You may find there's important, you know, sites and episodes of the evolution of humankind in different ways. But these sites, you need investments. That is the 1.8 billion rand that I'm talking about.
Right.
Where do you find this money?
Yeah, so the so the funding, of course, comes into question, the role of different municipalities and authorities, as well as the Department of Arts and Culture. So you've identified them, and I want to know the process of identifying them, because we also need to recognize that though that our idea of what heritage is and the purpose it serves are inevitably selective. So what kind of process do you embark on to identifying these sites, or are we still in a phase where we are looking at struggle sites?
No. The identification process, it's quite an old process.
Mm.
You need to focus, for instance, on the knowledge. Other than that knowledge, sites either, you know, you have got important knowledge that is there in a rural community or in a township that people actually, bring it to the attention of bodies like the Research Council,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then so forth, like the writings, all the writings of Coisex, and people, you know, and so forth.
An example.
Or it may be a deliberate process in the, like, for instance, I'll make an example with Mpumalanga. The research that we did, well, the research is very important when it comes to research resources. You need wheelbarrows of information in order to take something to UNESCO to say that this has an outstanding universal value to humanity and so forth.
Mm.
So I never think that, I'll make an example. Provincial government of Mpumalanga
once came up with a project, and they wanted to use heritage in order to brand the province. That was when Premier Makweta was the premier there.
Mm-hmm.
They then identified this heritage. You know, we came up, we gathered a team of experts. Heritage Council versus has got its own experts. People are not, full time, but they actually help in developing our policies and research.
Yes.
So those, I make an example. We're involved in that research, you know, where our experts actually led by Professor Delius. They managed to come up with a very, very, you know, interesting, very interesting results, which, you know, look at Mpumalanga 2 million years back, and sites like Makonjo Mountain, which actually depicts the early S formation, geological traces, which is geology, a specific area.
Mm.
And then at the moment, that site is a candidate for enlistment in UNESCO. And that it actually came from that process.
Right.
So, therefore, the process involves that maybe new knowledge that is there.
Mm-hmm.
That then, in that knowledge, it then depends on whether it's a building that's an archaeological site. Or, you know, and then we deploy, you know, archaeologists there to look at that whether there is any, you know, that's what is called statement of significance. What is significant about either the building or, you know, the space, or, if it's an icon or what, depending on what actually this, what is the relevance of this in terms of, a knowledge space. Then once we do that, you then be able, then you, there's a committee that must not sit down. For instance, if there's you're talking about a declaration of this place
as I, you know, then it will be, you know, graded by SARA, South Endorsement Resource Agency, and then once they is graded, then it the grading will then determine whether it's supposed to be a provincial or national.
Yes. Yes.
You know, a heritage site,
okay.
But a local heritage site, depending on the grading. There are instruments that are used to grade that.
Then yes, but Advocate, I do have to take a break, and there are a couple of other things that we must address, you know, especially questions of identity, yes, even urban histories and memories. So we'll come back with that. My guest is Advocate Sonwabile Mangotra, and he is the CEO of the National Heritage Council, because when you think of heritage, it is very complex. It is not made up of single identity, because identity by itself is shaped by a multitude of factors, and an individual is both subject to the circumstance and also is influenced by what is happening in their environment. So we'll look at these, especially my curiosity also has to do with urban histories and memories, and moving forward, how we will observe these. And we're in conversation with Advocate Sonwabile Mangotra, the CEO of the National Heritage Council. And he's been breaking down the very involved process of turning something aside. And maybe you've made an application, or you've alerted them, or they've identified a heritage site into an actual heritage site. And there are various stakeholders. It is a very complicated and intricate process that can take many, many years. Now, Advocate, let's look at urban histories and memories. Because by its nature, and its very nature, heritage is something that is created rather than something that is found, then it follows that heritage changes. So do we count the experiences? Do you foresee a future where we get to a point where we count the experience, say, just for an example, say, young Zimbabwean artist living in living in Yeovil, plying his trade there as urban heritage? So there are different aspects to this that I'm sure your considerations and the research runs very deep as to what is worthy and what isn't.
I remember not only when it comes to heritage, not only those or things that originate from us, we can be proud about.
Mm.
Yeah, here, you know, talking about, you know, even civilizations, that some civilizations of other people that we may want to, you know, copy, you know, through different ways.
Mm.
I'm not going to put an example. That's why our Nkosi Sikelel, you know, is actually served by used by two other countries in Africa.
Mm.
You know, it's used in Zambia, it's also used in Uganda. And it doesn't originate from them. So I think that to copy from other people that have lagged through civilization, and therefore they become part of our own heritage, or they become part of other people's heritage.
Mm.
But that's why we've differentiated between history and heritage. Because, you know, out of, you know, history, you know, itself, there are things that we say we like. Then we say we can celebrate this, because these are milestones that would become part of heritage to inspire the, you know, the current and future generations. But of course, I think that we may not like, but they must be part of our memory. We have spoken, for instance, about how, you know, Rwanda has actually, you know, memorialized the genocide out of Hitler, you know, and so forth. So therefore, I mean, Batista in Cuba, he was one of the most feared dictators. But these countries, they managed to say that, look, we don't want to forget this history, because it was part of our history. But at the same time, we don't want to sanitize it or celebrate it, you know, because that's why the debate around monuments, for instance, in our country, you know, following Rose Masford, has actually led now into the team that was appointed by Minister Mteto, which actually the Research Council was part of, you know, to come up with some recommendations to say that, and of course, look at how other countries have done. Take the Steve Biko, a torture place in PE.
Yeah.
The place at the moment is private development, but you might lose that space. Look at the Hungarians, for instance. They've used torture spaces and converted them into healing spaces. So it's part of that report that, you know, but at the same time, it may not be, you know, entirely, you know, good for our, you know, own, I mean, healing of the past, that you still have, you know, a dominance of our heritage spaces with, you know, icons that represent, you know, discredited ideologies or pain. How do you preserve pain?
Yeah.
Without sanitizing it.
You can't. Yes.
That's why the issue of the tick parks is coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so on.
Yes, Advocate, sadly we've run out of time. There's still so much to interrogate about this question because it's so close to our hearts. And there's just so many things that can be included or excluded from the heritage umbrella. So maybe we can pick it up at another opportunity. But thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thanks, Azania. Thanks for listening. And I would love that you have said that let's find time to talk about social memory.
Mm.
Not a miss and some time right. To engage with the callers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll make it a date. That's Advocate Sonwabile Mangocha, the CEO of the National Heritage Council.